All right. That would be a very confusing message. There was a flight attendant, excuse me. There was a gentleman who was flying from LA after kind of this big business convention thing, and he was flying back to Dallas, actually. But he got on a plot, the cheapest and quickest flight that he could get out of there was one that was going from LA, layover in Dallas, and then up to New York. And so when he got on the plane, he asked the flight attendant, "Will you please wake me up?" Because he was tired and had a long week and everything. He asked the flight attendant, "Will you please wake me up in Dallas? Because that's where I live. I need to get off instead of going all the way to New York." Well, he just woke up as the plane was descending in New York. And he was a little confused and a little concerned. And in fact, more than a little, he got a little frustrated, and more he realized where he was. And so he called that flight attendant over and he said, "Why didn't you wake me up? Why didn't you get me up? I was supposed to go to Dallas," and all in this huff and everything, and yelled at her. And she tried to apologize and said, "Okay, well, just go to the counter and they'll take care of you," and all that kind of stuff. And the flight attendant's a little, unnerved and everything like that. But one of the crew members comes up and talks to her and he says, "Wow, that gentleman sure was mad that he didn't get off in Dallas like he was supposed to." She was like, "Well, that's nothing. You should have heard what the guy said when I woke him up in Dallas and got him off the plane." Anyway, I don't know why I like these jokes. I'm glad you guys laugh because they're so corny in a lot of ways, but that's good. All right, so thinking about that idea of anger, just thinking about our whole series that we're looking at, the Sermon on the Mount here, Matthew 5 through 7, looking at this culture that Jesus is really starting to instill into the followers of Jesus, as we call ourselves followers of Jesus, what is this culture supposed to look like? What is the church supposed to look like? But what is the church, not just the community that gathers in a building, but what is the church supposed to look like in the community at large and in interacting with neighbors and family members and different things as well? And so kind of what we walked through a few weeks ago now, we looked at the Beatitudes. And to me, that's the foundation. The Beatitudes, blessed are and blessed be and those kind of things, meek and righteous and focused entirely on God and gentle. Those type of words are really the foundations of our faith, of this culture that Jesus is trying to bring in. But then a couple weeks ago then we looked at what does this look like to the world around us and how is this supposed to be implemented? Well, Jesus used big metaphors of the salt and the light. How does that look in our world around us? Well, it's supposed to be salty and tasty and interact with our world that way, but it's also supposed to shine the light of Jesus. And then last week we looked at the thesis statement. What is the main point of what Jesus is trying to say? Well, it's really kind of a confusing thesis statement because basically he's saying I came to not abolish the law but fulfill the law. And really, to me, that makes the thesis statement because that's what he's going to do in the next several sections, including this morning, in the next several sections as we go through them here over the next few weeks. But really, he's saying, this is what was supposed to happen all along. And in fact, when we look at this and this one in particular, these things are called the antithesis, these next, I think it's five or six. The rest of chapter five, anyway, I think there's six. And I'll talk about that more in just a second, but the thesis statement that Jesus gave us last week is this is what you were supposed to do, what the Jews and Israelites were supposed to do all along. I'm just going to try to make it more plain to you, and that's what he's going to do. He's going to break it down for us, at least some significant ones for us over the next several weeks. That being in mind, this morning I titled this Anger and we're already past that, but Anger and because a lot of times, or your Bible might say anger or murder on the top of this little section that we're going to look at, but to me, it's much more than that. It's more significant than just anger. In fact, hopefully it comes across that way and clear that this isn't just about an emotion and how we handle our anger. It's a much more holistic view, and I think fits into the culture of the kingdom so much better the way I've understood it this last week especially. That being said, if you look at the titles of your in your Bible, if you've got a Bible that has these headings, we've got in mind it's anger and then lust, divorce, oaths, retaliation, love your enemies are the next ones. I'm just going to lay this out. Looking ahead at some of these, I don't feel maybe qualified to speak on some of these things. Anger, even especially when I was younger, I had a really vibrant emotional response. That's not a good word. I was just a very angry child. When I got angry, it was explosive anger, I guess we'll say it that way. I've changed the way I dealt with anger as far as instead of explosive, it's more internal. Until the last few years here, finally, God gave me some grace on how I really deal with anger. And a lot of that has come because of what we're going to talk about this morning, actually, to be honest with you. But That being said, I just want to make clear that I'm not saying I'm an expert on these, that I've got these under control. This is exactly how I live my life. You guys know that. You know me well enough to know that I am not there yet. And so when I come up and I speak and I share what's in there, the only authority I have is maybe I've A, spent the time studying it this week, and B, I've got a little more background education, training, that kind of a thing. Otherwise, you guys, some of you probably have more experience than I with some of these things to talk about them than I would even, but just take that under consideration. I don't ever come up here saying, this is the way to do it because I've got it all figured out and I live this perfectly, okay? You guys know that. I just like to say it so that you guys for sure know that. And that's just where I'm at. And so I've got a little bit of hesitancy with that part of this as well. But with that being said, I'm going to probably sound fairly confident and demonstrative, hopefully, this morning as well, though, a little bit. But going back to the antithesis, you can go back there, Tom, thank you. The antithesis idea of the next several weeks, again, it has that title because it looks like it's counter to what has been taught in, or what's in the Old Testament. So if you go back in the Jesus' message here, he's going to say, you heard it said, or it has been said, or something along those lines. And it goes back to something Old Testament, something in the law that Moses gave. I think almost all of them, if not all of them, come from there. And the word antithesis means that it's against those teachings, what had been told in the Old Testament. So Jesus is doing a new teaching. And the reason that's a unfortunate title is because Jesus isn't changing the original meaning of the Old Testament laws. He is giving them he's redefining them or reinterpreting them to the way that they were really supposed to be and lived out anyway. And so it's more antithesis to the Jewish teaching of that time and probably even our intuitive nature than it is to anything in the Old Testament. But that being said, there are six of them, I think, over the next several weeks that Jesus is going to reinterpret and hopefully bring to light and are much more applicable, I think, for us, the way he defines them than how we've maybe naturally defined them. So this is verse 21. We're going to start in verse 21. It says, "You have heard that it was said," so there it is right away, "you have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment.'" All right, pretty straightforward. Most of us would probably say, yeah, that makes sense. Most people in our culture, I mean, we could argue some things about abortion and euthanasia and some of that kind of stuff. Most people in our culture say that if there's premeditated murder, then there should be some kind of a judgment to that, right? Conviction, maybe sentence for life, maybe people still believe to a certain extent in the death penalty, those kind of things. So this isn't that striking. This is just Jesus laying the foundation saying, okay, this is what we're going to talk about. And then he's going to take it a step farther. He says in verse, or further, in 22, he goes on, he says, but I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. It's that he's correlating those two things here. But then he goes on, he says, whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. All right, this is where we get a little bit more of the biblical breakdown of what's going on here. And so there's three things that Jesus lays out, liable to judgment, council, and liable to hellfire. And I'll talk about more of the specifics for all of those here in just a second. But what I want to do is I just want to take a step back. And I'm going to say, and this is a broad statement maybe, those three consequences are actually all equal. Okay? The judgment, the council, and the hellfire are all the same. And the reason I say that is because is kind of two things. One, as much as it's probably accurate to translate it hellfire, he's actually saying Gehenna of fire. And Gehenna at that time was a refuge outside of Jerusalem where they just constantly kept garbage and stuff burning. And so he's using a metaphor and an image there for us to hold on to. But that being said, the other reason is because all three of them, I think, lead to the same place. Okay, and this is where I won't lose you. All three of those lead to the same place, and I mean that because if we step back and we define hell, because that's the one that's probably the clearest to us, if we look at what hell is, or even Gehenna, the image that Jesus is using, he's referring to something more broad that we can define as complete and utter separation from God that's eternal. Complete and total separation from God, that's a much better definition than what I said. Complete and total separation from God that's eternal, and I didn't put that in there, but eternal. Okay, so we have a traditional view of hell, fire, you know, burning, brimstone, that kind of stuff, that fits well, that fits that definition perfectly, right? But it's, to me, a better understanding, And I'm not saying that we shouldn't have the fiery, burning, eternal stuff as an image. But to me, it's a better definition when we say hell is that it's eternal and complete separation from God. Okay? And if we agree with that, which I'm sure some of you are like, what, yet? But if we agree with that at this point, then when we break those other three things down, liable to judgment, liable to counsel, and liable to hell of fire of hell, whichever way he says it, hell of fire, they can all be the same consequence in the end. Okay? We know hell is ultimately the total and complete separation from God. Going to the council one, well, in the Jewish system, the council would have been the Sanhedrin. And if they went to the Sanhedrin and they were found guilty of whatever, you know, something like murder, their consequence would be complete separation from the Jewish people, if not death, right? There was the consequence of being stoned at that point in time. And that complete separation from the Jewish people and complete separation from their kin would have led to ultimately separation from God as well. They would have tied, and I would say that's the way the Old Testament's written. If they are not a part of the Jewish community, then they are cut off from God. That's the way their covenant works. That's the way God set up their community. And so, liable to counsel can lead to total and complete separation from God. And the first one of judgment, I think, also is fairly straightforward then, too, is that if we are judged, especially from a divine aspect, having done something that caused that separation from God, like a murder, and like Jesus is saying, anger and those other things, then that can lead to complete and total separation from God. And so instead of it being kind of a progressive thing, well, I'm just angry, but I didn't insult anybody, so I'm just, you know, liable to judgment. Well, I maybe made, you know, I maybe insulted somebody, but I didn't call him a fool, so I'm just liable to the council. And to me, it's just hard to break it down individually when it makes so much sense to say, okay, no, every single thing that we did that comes out of that anger, whether it's insult, whether it's calling someone a fool, whether it's which means just attacking their reputation and such a really a slap in the face in so many ways, they are all the same consequence. I'll let you soak that in for a second. All right, so keeping that in mind, if these are all the same, then the really what it gets down to is where is the heart at with that? And we'll talk more about that in just a minute. But again, just going back to those first two, just because there's just a little confusion a lot of times with the saying you fool or the insults, is that they're both kind of the same mentality as far as I'm responding out of my anger in some way. And the specifics maybe don't matter as much as what's the reaction. And the reaction is we are damaging not only the relationship that we have with that person by insulting them or calling them a name or whatever it is, we are damaging our own hearts and our own minds, right? And so our attitude within us towards that other person is causing us problems within our own self. There's that old saying, right? Sticks and stones may break our bones, but words can never hurt us. Unless you believe them, which then they can destroy you, which is what Glassman says. And I think that, again, goes back to this idea of those abusive words, abusive language can be as bad as anything else that we do in a relationship with somebody else, right? And we know that. We look at, you know, people that have abusive relationships, not just that physical abuse can be just as, verbal abuse can be just as harmful as physical abuse. And we know that, and I know that well, that I've never been beat up physically, at least not to the point where I really, really hurt, but I've had people say things to me where I feel like I've been beat up, right? I think we've all been there. We've all experienced those things. And so the words that we say, again, are just as heinous as some of the actions that we may take. And that's exactly what Jesus is saying. I may not kill you with a knife. I shouldn't say I. Someone may not kill you with a knife or a candlestick or a rope or whatever other clue things you want to bring in. But we can easily kill each other with words. And that's exactly, again, Jesus' point here as well. In fact, he goes on to say, and I just think this is where that's complete and utter separation from God comes into play more clearly in these next two verses. So verse 23 and 24, it says, "So if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift." This is the heart of what Jesus is telling us. Sure, it has to do with anger and murder to a certain extent, but really it has to do with where are we at with our brother or our sister. And a couple things just to pull out of this. First, when Jesus says brother, he's also including sister, he's including neighbor. None of us, I don't think, are arrogant enough to go up to Jesus and say, well, who's my brother? Right? Like we looked at in Sunday school last week, who's my neighbor? Everybody is your brother. Everybody, well, I don't know if we'll go that way, but humanity. Humanity is who he's talking about. Those brothers, those sisters, that neighbor. And Jesus says, if you remember that something is against you, then you need to do something about it. And in fact, he says, if you're coming to the altar, and the image, like we sang in the song, Come to the Altar this morning, is an image of not coming to communion specifically. I know there was actually a children's minister that I knew that didn't take communion for a year or more probably, because he had a disagreement or he had so much anger towards somebody and he couldn't resolve it, so he didn't take communion. And that can be part of it, absolutely, right? Communion can be part of it. Coming in and being a part of a worship service can be part of that. But if and I've spoken about this a few times, but if, you know, and I can tell you more about it some other time when I can take the time, but worship, our worship with God is not just a place, is not just a building, is not just a location, it's not just a situation or a circumstance. Worship of God is the purpose that we're here for. Someone posted, and if you're on Facebook, you'll know who it is, but someone posted on my timeline yesterday about something she had read or seen on Facebook as well about our purpose here. And I didn't respond to her specifically about what I would say our purpose is, but I will say clearly here, our purpose is to worship God, to honor, to glorify, to bring Him whatever praise that we can. And so looking at this holistically, looking at what is happening within what Jesus is saying here, is that whenever, basically, we have a disagreement, when we have anger, when we have frustration, we have animosity, we have things going on in our own heart towards someone else, we need to take care of that. Because it will get in the way of our relationship and our worship of God. And that is exactly why Jesus talks about hell in the previous verse. It impacts that relationship and that dynamic that we have with Him. It goes back to the two greatest commandments. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, and then love your neighbor as yourself. They are intricately tied. You cannot love God, and John says this in 1 John 4, you cannot love God if you hate or are angry or have animosity towards your brother. I added a couple of those words. John says hate. I would say because of what Jesus says here, you can add anger, animosity, frustration. Which is why also we spend so much time on that conflict resolution, and I reprinted it and posted it on the board out there, why that's so important for me, that's why it's so important for us as elders as well, is that we find ways to work that out and deal with that. And there's a process, and there's a plan, and there's a purpose to what's behind there and what we're doing there, so that we can have a community that works those things out. I didn't plan on bringing this up, but I'm ahead of schedule, so I'm going to take this time for this. This last week, I posted something on Facebook, which has gotten a bad habit for me to do at this point, probably. But it has something to do with the Pope's decision to kind of push for civil unions for the LGBTQ, those that have that lifestyle, homosexual lifestyle kind of a thing, mostly. And I tagged a Catholic friend from back in Minnesota, and I just asked, you know, I asked her what her thoughts were and was concerned. Well, you can imagine, it being Facebook, I got a fair amount of negative feedback from some and animosity toward from others. And there were several things that came up. And at first, there was a lot of emotion involved with it. I mean, I could read the emotion and the things that were going on. But there was one particular person that was so angry to begin with and just almost attacking and lashing out. But the more that we conversed, at least this was my opinion, what I saw and what I read, that changed from anger and animosity in that dynamic to a conversation that we can have about the topic. Okay, if you don't know what I'm talking about and you have Facebook, go and read through some of that. I think it was very valuable. It was a particular individual that I've known for quite a while and known her background and her situation and her story and her family, and just appreciated that we got to the point where it felt like she was willing to share her side of things in a non-angry and a non-attacking way, and I could respond by being gracious and kind as well. I feel like I was fairly gracious and kind throughout the whole thing, to be honest with you, but I probably wasn't very well, but it's hard to get that process started sometimes because we think, well, initially there's going to be a blow up. Initially there's going to be emotions. Initially it's going to be hard. And it is. But the more we talk about it, the more that dialogue continues, the more we can come to a place where we can rationally, calmly, and in love figure this out. And that's I guess, my point in all of this. And to me, this is the heart of the gospel. This is the heart of what I'm doing as a pastor, is how do we figure these things out together? And a reason why we need to continue to have these conversations as well. That being said, I do want to highlight one last thing from this passage. Stand up and have my authority back or something, I don't know. But anyway, I just feel better standing. But he says in there, remember that your brother has something against you. Okay? And so my personal struggle is that I'm just naive about things and ignorant. Actually, I was told that I live in a vacuum this week, so which is probably fair. I probably do. I think she was a little angry at me too, but that's another conversation. I struggle with this because I don't always know. We don't always know when our brother has something against us. Because we live in the Midwest, and we are conservative evangelical Christians, and we don't say things because it'll just cause more pain. In fact, I posted on somebody else's this week, and that's basically what she told me, is that it's going to cause more pain. It's going to cause more conflict. And it does at first. I agree. It does at first. But in the long run, it's better. And so what I want to say about this is that, to me, my relationships almost always grow. And I don't even know if I can think of a situation, or maybe one or two, where when someone came to me and said, "This is what is your what you hurt me with. This is what you said. This is what you did. This is what I'd like to see you do differently," where I can respond and I can find a way to make it better. I've said things from the pulpit that someone came up to me or texted me and said that hurt my feelings, and this is why. And I think I have a better relationship with those people that have done that with me. And so if we don't say something, this is my frustration, and so if I sound a little angry, I need to work on this, but my frustration is I don't know. And if we don't say, if you don't come and talk to me, if I don't come and talk to you, if we don't talk to each other, that animosity, anger, frustration is getting in the way of the relationship that we can have. So if I'm angry with somebody, I may not say anything. I may still laugh with them and joke with them and talk with them. But that anger and that frustration and that hurt is still there. And it's damaging and getting in the way of that relationship that I have with you and with others. So we need to share those things in a loving, caring, compassionate way, right? I can handle it if you come and yell at me most of the time. But try not all come together at the same time and do that. That would be a little hard, but We need to do this better. Not just us. I'm not pointing the finger at anyone here or anything, but the Christian church. Because to me, when Jesus says we will show them by our works, a few passages ago in with the light of the world, I think this is the main one. We can show this world something completely different by the way we deal with relationships. So different. In February of 2008, James Fantroy was convicted of stealing $20,000 from the federal government through government grants as a city council member in Dallas. Because Fantroy had kidney cancer and was in a wheelchair, the U.S. District Judge Ed Kincaid told him that he would give him an option. He could either spend a month in prison or he could publicly apologize for stealing that money. Can you guess which one he chose? He took the jail time. He said he would rather spend one whole month instead of taking 5 minutes to apologize for what he did. And that's the kind of prison we put ourselves in a lot of times too. We're unwilling to apologize. We're unwilling to reach out. We're unwilling to do these hard things. And so we put ourselves in our own prison. But Jesus closes with verses 25 and 26. He says, "Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge and the judge to the guard and you be put in prison. Truly I say to you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny." And just like I spent 15 minutes on the last two verses, I could probably spend another 15 here. I won't do that. But These verses just extrapolate the need for us to work out things quickly, really. Find a way to deal with it and to move on in a fairly rapid manner, because there are going to be longer consequences the longer this is held out, which is exactly what Jesus is saying. He's saying, deal with it now. Deal with it quickly. Deal with it well, because the longer it gets dragged out, the more that hurt and that pain and that everything else gets piled onto it. In fact, we might get to the point where we've got to go back for years and years and decades and even longer maybe and say, I've got to deal with this and finally get the last penny paid by finally working out all those things with that other person. That being said, as we close our time here this morning, I also want to point out that we can't control other people. Right? If you have kids, you know that very quickly. We just can't. And so we can do all we can. We can do everything and make every step and do all the things that we feel that we can possibly do. And again, looking at the conflict resolution, if you ever need help with anything as far as a mediator or the church stepping in or the elders being a part of something, just you need to talk to us and let us know, and we can try to do what we can as well to help work out relationships, especially within this community here. But we can only do so much. And once we get to the point where we feel like, okay, I've done all I can, and I'm just going to step back and let them, they've got to do their side of it. And that's very fair. And I think Jesus understood that. But my understanding from John, writing about Jesus in John's letters, is that it's also important for us to leave the door open. If you've been to a hotel, and I don't know if they do this anymore anywhere, it's been a while since I've seen this, and you get a suite, they've got two doors inside those rooms where they join, right? So if you got a family going together somewhere, you know, one family can stay on one side, the other, and you can shut the door and get some privacy too. So both sides have to open their door for it to be a walkway. My metaphor that I want to use here is we need to be that door, or we need to leave our side of the door open. We need to open that door, even if theirs is completely closed, even if they're completely shut out, even if they want to stay on their side of the room and be shut off, that is their choice. Our choice, as far as following Jesus, is to always leave that door open, so that when they decide, or if they decide to come through their door, they don't meet another door. They meet an open room for us to have that relationship fixed, restored, whatever it looks like. In fact, there's a story that I want to close with this morning that I think just encompasses this mentality of grace and forgiveness. It comes from a young man, or the story is about a young man named Bruce Goodrich. And he was being initiated into the cadet corps at Texas A&M University. One night, Bruce was forced to run until he dropped, but he never got up. Bruce Goodrich died before he entered college. A short time after the tragedy, though, Bruce's father wrote a letter to the administration, the faculty, student body, and even the Corps of Cadets. And he says this. He says, I would like to take this opportunity to express my appreciation, or the appreciation of my family, for the great outpouring of concern and sympathy from Texas A&M University and the college community over the loss of our son, Bruce. We are deeply touched by the tribute paid to him in the battalion. We are particularly pleased to note that his Christian witness did not go unnoticed during his brief time on campus. Mr. Goodrich went on, he says, I hope it will be of some comfort to know that we harbor no ill will in the matter. We know that our God makes no mistakes, and Bruce had an appointment with his Lord and is now secure in his celestial home. When the question is asked, why did this happen? Perhaps one will be ready to say, so that many will consider where they will spend eternity. If Jesus is right, which I like to think that he always is, our reaction to people around us is essential to our relationship with him. And so moving forward, it's hard. It's difficult. It's not fun, to be honest with you, but it's essential for that relationship and that dynamic of our forever home, of being drawn into that more deeply. Let's pray. Gracious Father, I just pray that you continue to lead and guide and direct us more towards you, that through the interactions that we have with those around us, the interactions that we have with people that irritate us and irk us and just simply annoy us, that we can respond with your grace and your compassion and your love. Help us to just be able to respond to you well and to be open to your calling and your leading. If not for the sake of the relationship that we have with other people, but for the sake of our relationship with you. We pray this all in your Son Jesus' name. Amen. Worship team can come on up.